The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Women of Washington is a series of weekly radio interviews with Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation of Washington leaders. Aileen and Gigi interview the most accomplished women in Washington who share their life lessons and secrets to success.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today in the studio, we have Kay Ely. Our guest today is director of GSA's IT Schedule 70, the largest, most widely used acquisition vehicle in the federal government. Before coming to GSA, Ms. Ely served as Chief Learning Officer at the Office of Personnel Management, where she developed and set the strategic direction of OPM's Learning and Knowledge Management Program. She was selected in 2010 as a recipient of the Presidential Rank Award. Ms. Ely holds a BS and an MS degrees in speech pathology from Phillips University and a master's degree in management from Webster University in St. Louis.
Okay, let's begin with your background. Virtually all of the women that we've had here at Women of Washington have had some big influence growing up that they could point to. So who or what was your biggest influence when you were growing up?
Well, I think that I just was fortunate to have so many different people in my life when I was growing up. But clearly, growing up in a in the Midwest, in Arkansas, both of my parents were a huge influence on me. My father was at the Small Business Administration for a number of years, so his passion and his enthusiasm about public service really rubbed off on me, and I would have to say that he and all his little witty thoughts that I took with me over my life have really been a huge influence.
Your educational degrees, both your undergraduate and your first master's degree, are in speech pathology. So that is a far cry from what you're doing today. Did you actually practice as a speech pathologist?
Yes, I did. And when I graduated from high school, the one thing I clearly knew was that I was going to go to college. But it just seemed like at the time there were so many opportunities and so many different things that I could do. It was just hard to pick one. And I settled on speech pathology for a variety of reasons. I'm actually totally deaf in my left ear. So I've had that disability all of my life since I was 5 years old. And I spent a lot of time with audiologists. And so I think the whole concept of that business intrigued me. So I went ahead and got my master's in speech pathology, and I practiced for 10 years and learned a lot in the process. But I always had this inkling, this interest, this desire to be a part of the business world. As a matter of fact, my master's degree in speech pathology was doing a business case study for rural services in northern Oklahoma. So I think I've always had this interest as well in business. So after I did the speech pathology, I turned to the business world.
Kay, you've had an enormous success in the government. How did you prepare yourselves for such a big jump from speech pathology to the government?
Well, I think in part, certainly the master's degree that I got at Webster University in management helped me make that transition. A lot of the courses that were related to management certainly helped me make that transition. But then I took a combination of what I had learned in my other schoolwork and what I had learned actually practicing speech pathology for 10 years. And I put my application package together, and there were three or four different opportunities. I was able to test out, if you will, for a management analyst, a budget analyst, or a contract specialist. And I ended up interviewing for a job at the Pentagon as a contract specialist and fell in love with that line of work. And I guess the rest is history.
So you had a lifelong passion for public service. You mentioned where your roots came with your parents. How did you find your way to procurement and contracting?
Well, when I started, I think in a lot of ways that was just good luck because of the opportunities at the Pentagon. There was a contracting position open for people new to the federal government, And I was part of the Special Procurement Action Team. We were called SPAT. And that was a lot of fun. And I came in as a temporary employee and worked as a temporary employee for about 9 months and fell in love with the line of business and the people at the Pentagon and stayed there working for the Office of Secretary of the Army for about 7 years. So it was, I had some tremendous mentors that helped me learn the business. And there's no place like learning the contracting business except at DOD.
So, Kay, you're from Arkansas, and interestingly, many of our guests that we have are from the South and from small towns. So, did you grow up in a small town in Arkansas?
I grew up in Little Rock,
okay.
Which I think on a lot of standards, if you look at the numbers, they wouldn't necessarily call it a small town, but it had very much a small town feel. As a matter of fact, I go back and visit my parents regularly. I'm going back in a couple of weeks, and I never don't see someone I know when I'm visiting. So it had very much a small town, very much a family feel, and I think it was one of the greatest places ever to grow up.
How do you feel that growing up in that sort of environment prepared you for a move to a big city like Washington, D.C., and working for the largest employer in our country, the federal government?
Well, I think it's thinking about stories and remembering when I was growing up, and I talked earlier about the influence that my parents had. They were really big about traveling around the United States, and we didn't travel much outside of the United States, but it was very important to them that we see the country that we live in. And one of the key vacations that my mom really wanted to do was go to the nation's capital, go to Washington, D.C. So we did that in the 1960s, and because of their belief being the nation's capital, how important that was, we called it the dress-up vacation. And everywhere we went, my mother had us wear dresses, and we looked really nice. We got to visit the Hill, and it made such an impression on me as such a young woman. This is our nation's capital. This is the heartthrob of the world, and it really stuck with me.
Our guest today is Kay Ely, the director of GSA's IT Schedule 70. Coming up, we'll ask Kay about her challenges and successes at GSA. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Our guest today is Kay Ely, the director of GSA's Schedule 70.
Kay, you've worked in the government and in acquisition for over a decade now. It's a challenging time for procurement in the federal government. What is the biggest challenge that you have faced since you started?
Well, you're absolutely right. The acquisition business becomes, I think, more complicated and more complex day to day. However, at the same time, I think there is more information and more data available than ever before. So I think one of the biggest challenges that I had in the past was not having access to that data, not having the information I needed to make good business decisions. So I think what we're doing currently at GSA, we have a program called the Common Acquisition Platform in the hallways. And there's a tremendous amount of information that we're now putting in the hallways for all contracting, all acquisition professionals to have access to at any given time. So that was one of the biggest challenges I had previously that I think we have a real answer for.
So, you know, you've had this desire for business, and whether you're in private sector or whether you're in the government, the statistics are still not good in terms of women at the managerial and executive levels, in terms of the percentage of women versus men. And so I'm sure in your role through the years, you found yourself dealing with men both on the government side and also on the private industry side. Has that changed at all in the decade plus that you've been in government?
I think it's changed dramatically, and I think there's a lot of reasons for that, a lot of additional opportunities. I just think a lot of awareness with regard to sort of the value and the power of women that we can bring to the business world. So last week I was on a panel, and my boss, Tom Sharp, who's the commissioner of Federal Acquisition Service, had myself and three other senior executives, all women, that were also on the panel. And that was just just a really good indication to me that we are making a difference, we're making progress. He recognized it, and it was a really good event, and I'm seeing more and more of that. And as I have the opportunity to speak across in different venues, there's more and more women on panels, and I think that sends a tremendous message to our audience. When I'm working with some of my colleagues and a panel is being set up, I'm always the voice saying, don't forget some diversity. Let's make sure we have diversity represented.
Kay, according to a recent article in Federal Times, over the past 8 to 10 years, the procurement workforce has shrunk by approximately 20%, and the number of contracts actions have dramatically increased. Today's procurement workforce is less trained, really, because of the lack of ability to have resources to be able to train your team, and because of loss of that personnel. Agencies also are fearful about not having fair and equitable and being, you know, somewhat treated by contractors. This seems to be setting up for not a great situation. Would you recommend somebody today to join the government and go into procurement and contracting and with, you know, that kind of stage set?
I absolutely would recommend anyone coming in the government and into the acquisition workforce. I think there's more opportunities, and there's certainly with challenges, but there's more opportunities than ever before. The business is complex. However, it is probably one of the most rewarding things that you will ever do. I have spent time, as we talked earlier, as a speech pathologist and then in the private sector, but 25 plus years in the federal government. And in that time, I have never felt more rewarded and more enthused about coming to work every day. So I think the things I talked about earlier with regard to the information that's available, social media, the tools that we're trying to provide to the acquisition workforce, those are the reasons that I feel very comfortable encouraging people to come into the government and come into the acquisition workforce, because the information that we're able to provide and the things that we're trying to do at GSA is unparalleled. So, yes, absolutely, I would recommend. It's one of the best feelings in the world.
Well, okay, we can feel your enthusiasm, and then even before the show, our brief conversation about what's going on right now at the GSA. So I'm sure there's a couple of listeners that would like to know how they could get started in a career in procurement and contracting, particularly at the GSA.
Well, and there's several things that folks can do. I would encourage everyone to, as I've done with my own children, as a matter of fact, encourage everyone to take a look at USA Jobs and see what the opportunities are. And if you're a recent graduate and you're looking at opportunities as you've come out of college, or if you've come out of a advanced degree program, then take a look at USA Jobs and the Student Pathway Program. USAjobs.gov. There's a tremendous amount of information. There's a tremendous amount of information at that particular website for wherever you are in your career. But when I was at OPM, that was an opportunity I had to revamp and redesign the USA Jobs website. So we did that, and it's a great tool. So I would encourage anyone to take a look. Also, in the contracting arena, we have direct hire authority, which gives us opportunities to directly hire people if they new to the acquisition workforce, if they have the qualifications and the college degree, which is required for the acquisition workforce.
So, what should somebody study? Can anybody with a degree in any kind of background apply, or do you look for very specific degrees or certifications?
Well, we're looking for specific degrees, at least, and it depends on where you're coming in your career. You need to have a bachelor's degree, but in that bachelor's degree, you only need to have 24 hours of credit of quote-unquote business and a lot of things. We all take basic accounting courses when we're doing our undergraduate degree, and statistic, those kinds of things count. A bachelor's degree with those 24-hour credits and almost anything will get you qualified.
I've seen online a couple of the universities in the area are offering certification courses for procurement and contracting. What is that as compared to what you just spoke about?
Well, those are certainly really, really good programs. Sometimes they are in addition to a bachelor's degree, so it's a little bit more specialized. And so those are really good programs as well. But the key is really having the bachelor's degree and at least the 24-hour credits.
Both Aileen and I have spent most of our career on the vendor side of things. And I think it's a tough time to be a vendor selling to the government as well. I know a lot of the larger information technology vendors have chosen not to hold a schedule or not to hold their own schedule, maybe to have some resellers hold it because of the risks that are associated with not following, you know, the myriad of regulations and FARs that they need to follow. And I think those big companies are fine because they'll figure out another way to sell their goods and services. But what about the smaller companies? Do you have advice to them?
85% of the vehicle holders, the contract holders in Schedule 7 are small businesses. So we do a tremendous amount of work to assist small businesses to get on schedule, to help understand how to get on schedule. And I think at the heart of all of this, whatever the challenges are, it's all about communication. And that's true with anything we do. We have a webinar. When I first came to GSA 4 years ago, there was a very small select group that had the opportunity to come in and learn about what we were doing in Schedule 70. Well, I came in and with my team, we turned that into a WebEx, a webinar, and instead of 35 participants, our last count was 350. So it's really about getting the information out to everyone. We also have a new initiative. Our administrator is focused on being an economic catalyst, and this certainly fits in that realm. So we're doing a lot in the space of lowering the barrier and trying to understand. We're doing a lot of surveys to find out what is keeping you from being interested in coming into the federal government. We need innovative new technology companies, and we're putting a lot of processes in place. We also have an initiative called the Fast Lane, FAST, which is a little play on words, but the concept of that is helping vendors get on schedule faster. Instead of the 119 days it currently takes, we've gotten people on schedule in 20 to 30 days.
Those sound like fantastic programs. So what would be the best way for a small company to find out about those resources, either Fast Lane or the webinars that would educate them?
I have always been very open about sending me an email and contacting me. I have a person that's been designated as my industry liaison. His name is Carl Krumholtz, and he's been great at assisting small companies and anybody that needs to have information. And I'm happy if anybody wants to send me an email. It's kay.ely@gsa.gov.
Okay, Gartner predicts that by 2017, 20% of all market leaders will lose their position by companies that were created after 2000 because of the lack of the digital advantage. It definitely sounds like GSA has gotten that message and is taking advantage of the digital advantage. Now, you've been on both sides of the table. You have worked for the federal government, and you've also been part of a startup. So now that you've been on both sides of the table, what would you whisper in the ear of somebody starting a small business today and make a recommendation about how to approach and maximize the huge opportunity that's in front of them when it goes to doing business with the federal government?
Well, I definitely think that I would recommend don't hesitate to ask. Ask questions, seek out assistance. I know that there are a lot of consultants that help small businesses and other companies get on schedule. We can do that. We can do that at GSA, and we're happy to do that. We have several examples where we've had small companies come in and ask to, you know, how do I answer these very complex questions? Can you help me? And we have done that. So, and we love statistics with dire projections and predictions as to what the future will hold. We had a prediction, if you will, that we would be way down in business volume this year, and we're up further than we were last year. So the predictions are good. It helps us understand our market and where we need to go. But at the same time, we're a lot a lot more bullish on the future of the Schedules program.
Well, clearly GSA has really embraced the cloud and taking advantage of it. Has it changed the path of your journey on your career? And is do you have any recommendations for those starting out that, you know, things are a little bit different here and there may be an opportunity for them because of this change?
Well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity. I think one of the things that I learned most significantly when I was in the private sector is what it truly means to provide customer service. And I would encourage anyone, no matter how you want to sort of get that experience, you can get that experience in any kind of line of business. But learning how to meet the customer needs, ask the customer the questions, ask them what does success look like, I think that's very key, and I think that's been a tremendous help to me and to what we're trying to do at GSA right now.
Our guest today is Kay Ely, Director of GSA's IT Schedule 70. Coming up, we'll ask Kay about mentoring and networking resources for women in the federal government. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Kay Ely, Director of GSA's Schedule 70. Kay, earlier we were talking about mentors. Did you ever have any mentors that really inspired you in your career?
Yes, I had many mentors. As I think back, many of them were women. But it's interesting, if you allow yourself, you can have a mentor at any level, at any point in your career. It doesn't necessarily just have to be one person. But I think back when I started at the Pentagon in 1988, which was a long time ago, Ruth Wissinger was one of the first mentors that I had. And she shared, as I said earlier, I was trying to learn a lot about the contracting business. And she was so incredibly gracious and willing to share her knowledge. And I think that's something I've carried with me and tried to repeat as far as sharing what I know with those around me. But there's a lot of things she taught me. She taught me, and folks from my team will laugh because they hear me talk about it all the time, but she said, every document you ever create has to stand on its own. It won't necessarily have you there briefing, so make sure that the message is clear, the intent is clear on just that one document. And that stuck with me and a lot of things. And then as I moved on into my career, I had a mentor, Dee Lee, who was at GSA, not during the same time, but she was a mentor to me. She actually hired me from my first senior executive position that I did at Office of Management and Budget, and she's a phenomenal leader. She's left government. She works in the private sector, but she was just she was a mentor to me in so many ways. I always wanted to aspire and be like Dee. She had so many great thoughts. As a matter of fact, one of the things she taught me, and she's known for saying that I carry with me today in my job, is with revenue comes responsibility. So if you have a program that's generating a tremendous amount of revenue, it is still your responsibility to make sure that's a good program, that you're helping your customer, and that you're meeting all the regulations and the requirements. So yes, I've had many mentors, and I'm so thankful that they were able to have such a impact on my professional career.
Well, Dee Lee sounds like an amazing mentor. Does GSA have a formal mentor program?
We're working on more formal mentor programs. As a matter of fact, we have an event coming up in Integrated Technology Service, which is my organization, Mary Davies' organization, my boss, and we're having a mentor day where we're going to spend time with some of the less seasoned employees and some of the new employees to ITS. So we do a lot of informal mentoring. We have a lot of development programs, and there is no doubt that at GSA we're focused on the next acquisition workforce and the next generation of federal workers.
How would you suggest somebody find a mentor?
Well, it's interesting. I think you find a mentor when you're least expecting it. And it's not always going to be your supervisor. It's not always going to be somebody in your chain of command. It could be someone in one of the programs you're attending, or, you know, there's National Contract Management Association, there's ACT IAC, there's a lot of organizations where you can find informal mentors. And I think that's important, is to look external, look internal, and just strike up a conversation. And, you know, while we're on the subject of mentors, my current boss, Mary Davey, has just been such a tremendous influence. And what I've learned from her, because she is more junior than me by several years, is how to really embrace social media. And she tweets, and I'm not there yet, but I'm getting close. But what a phenomenal mentor she's been.
You know, I was reading this blog post that just this morning. It was about mentoring, and she had titled it Everyone and No One. And her point was that there isn't any one person in her career that she would point to and say that person mentored me, but so many people along the way. And much as you said, Kay, just informal conversations can leave you with that little pearl of wisdom. Let's shift a little bit because there's mentorship and then there's sponsorship. And I think that we talk a lot about mentoring and mentorship, but one of the things that women in particular, I think, have a hard time with is this concept of sponsorship and the fact that it's important if you do want to progress further in your organization, whether it be public sector or out in the private sector, you need somebody who's not only going to give you that good advice, but who's going to be there at the table and say, yes, I think that he or she deserves this next job. Have you had that sort of sponsorship in your career?
I don't think I've had that kind of sponsorship so specifically. And I think what I encourage now is some of the millennials that I work with to actually ask for sponsorship and actually ask for that kind of commitment. I think it came by for me in a less formal way, but I think that's incredibly important. And to have that day-to-day commitment, I certainly did have coaches throughout my career, which was a tremendous assistant. But to actually have that sponsorship, not so much. I think it was more the informal mentorship.
You know, I think it's funny, as you talk to women, typically women of our generation haven't had that sponsorship. And if they have had somebody, it's not because they asked for it. It was because somebody saw something in them that maybe they didn't see in themselves. But I do think it's important for women to be comfortable with asking for that sponsorship. And I think that's something that they typically have a hard time. Do you have any recommendations for how they should do that?
Well, I think it's as we talked about earlier, just ask. There are a lot of women like myself that are in leadership positions that are more than willing to share time and knowledge and information and experiences. So absolutely, it's just ask. And then if someone, for whatever reason, the answer is not a yes or a positive response, then go ask somebody else, because you will find someone.
Today, our guest is Kay Ely, Director of GSA's IT Schedule 70. Okay. Women still represent single digits in leadership position in our boardrooms and our executive positions in the Fortune 100. And diversity numbers for minorities in these executive positions are even worse. Any advice you have for the managers out there about how to improve their diversity and improve the pool of candidates that they can have?
Well, I certainly think radio shows like this certainly help. And as I mentioned previously, your many guests that are all in women are all women in senior positions has been so impressive. So one thing people need to just tune in as they're thinking about recruiting folks into those positions. I just think it's if you look at the world around us, if you look at the diversity in the world, that there are so many opportunities and so many lessons learned. We have women leaders, you know, from around the world. Look at Margaret Thatcher, and we could go on and on with very successful women leaders. So it's kind of just thinking in terms of looking at the success, looking at the benefits of women in leader positions, and as far as how to actually do the recruiting, I know there's women out there that are very interested in senior positions, not just in the federal government, but also in private sector. So recruit wide, throw that net out, and I think they'll be very pleasantly surprised.
We talked about advice to the management of those companies, but what about the woman or the minority person trying to apply or to try to climb the ranks to become an executive. Any pearls of wisdoms that you could pass along there about strategies of how to get ahead? Because clearly you have figured it out.
Well, I think probably to really continue to climb the ladder or to have opportunities, don't give up. Don't give up on yourself. You may have to look more than one place. I mentioned USA Jobs earlier. And in this particular case, it was my son and not my daughter. So shifting a little bit from women, but I encouraged him when he first came out of college to search through USA Jobs. And he ended up putting in about 50 different applications, and he did get 3 responses. But again, I encouraged him to keep applying. So that would be in my advice to anyone, is don't get discouraged. Apply again and again, because the positions are out there, the opportunities are out there. And once you get started in a career in federal government, you will be so pleased.
And I'm going to put a plug in for the federal government. The OPM study came out that 40% of the executive positions are actually filled by women. So, that's a good place to start your career.
Okay, so one of the books that we often reference on this show is Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In. Mm-hmm. And in particular, she's got a chapter that talks about how your career can be a jungle gym, not a straight line. And a lot of times we ask our guest, which theirs has been, I don't feel like I need to ask you, because you started in speech pathology and then shifted to procurement and acquisition with the federal government. So I would say that's definitely not a straight line. What advice would you give to young women or men who may be listening to this show, who may be in a job that they like fine, but isn't ultimately what they want to do? How do you think it's best to really make that kind of big career switch like you did?
Well, you're right. My career has been quite a jungle gym. And as I look back, every rung of the way has just been so incredibly helpful to me and to get me to where I am today and the perspective that I have on the business of government today. So in that jungle gym, there were times that maybe it didn't feel quite as right, but I still learned a lot. And I, as I mentioned earlier, I continued asking questions so I could learn more. There's a quote, and I don't know who said it, but it really has always stuck with me. It's, there's no growth in your comfort zone, and there's no comfort in your growth zone. And that has always encouraged me, even if I'm a little uncomfortable, to keep seeking out new learnings. I'm a lifelong learner, and I guess that fits with my role at OPM when I was the chief learning officer. But I think that's important for all of us. You never stop learning. And even though I've been in the federal government in the acquisition business for almost 30 years, I learn something new every day. So I think if we open our minds to learning and to challenging ourselves and knowing that sometimes the straight line works for many people. And I think that's the other advice I would give, is choose your own path. A straight line may be great for someone, or a jungle gym like me might be better for someone else. But choose your own path, and only you will truly know what is the right path.
Our guest today is Kay Ely, director of GSA's IT Schedule 70. Coming up, we'll ask Kay how she balances it all. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Kay Ely. She's the director of GSA Schedule 70.
Kay, your success is not only limited to your career, but you've got a family, a large family, and you're active in so many things. So first, let me ask you, what do you like to do when you're not working? What are your hobbies or interests that you have outside of work?
Well, I love to travel. And my husband, who is retired from the federal government, we take advantage every time we can. As a matter of fact, we went to Canada this summer to watch the Women's World Cup. And that was just a lot of fun. But another one of those tips that one of my mentors shared with me was work hard, play hard. So I think we all work hard, and there's so many challenges. So when you get a chance to get away, whether it's the beach or the mountains or another country, I love to travel. I love to read. and I read a combination of fiction and nonfiction. It's a nice little balance, and I love to exercise. My husband and I walk and walk. Here we are, not too far from Georgetown. We were in Georgetown the other day, and I don't know, we must have walked 10 miles. But I think all of that helps keep me energetic so that I can keep doing this business of government.
We get a lot of feedback that younger listeners like to know is, how have you balanced it all? You've got a family. You've got a very full career. What tips or tricks have you learned along the way to balance it at all?
Well, I think one of the things I've learned trying to balance, as you mentioned earlier, I have five children, and we have a blended family. So I've learned, talk about mentors. I think my children are some of the best mentors in my life. I learned a tremendous amount from them. But there was a time in my life when I was working in the Pentagon, and I was a single parent, and I had three small children. So that was indeed quite a balancing act. And I think what I learned is, don't sweat the small stuff. And I learned that you do the best job that you can. I know I laugh now because my son, when I came home one time tired from work from the Pentagon, and I thought, I've got to cook a dinner. I've got to put a really good healthy meal on the table. And I asked the kids, I said, well, what do you guys want to do for dinner? And they very enthusiastically said, I don't know, where are we going? And I thought, okay. So I gave myself a break. We all parked, you know, packed up into the car, and away we went. So you find out what's right for you and what works. And that's how we do it.
Both Gigi and I have commented how important it is to have a supportive spouse as to the ability to be able to reach the success in our careers. Any advice on picking a life partner? It seems that both you and your husband were in the same business before he retired. Any advice there?
Well, it took me twice to get it right. So talk about a jungle gym. And I learned a lot from my first marriage as well. I got to travel a lot. My first husband was actually in the Air Force. So a lot of my travels was associated with that. But then I think we get older, you get wiser. My husband, John, who I mentioned earlier, is also in the contracting field. He retired from Customs and Border Protection as a senior procurement executive. So clearly we had a lot in common. And we haven't talked too much about personality types, but the infamous Myers-Briggs, which I think I've done four times in my career, I'm an ENFP, and he's an ENFP. So I'm not sure if that opposites attract is right or not, because we seem to be getting it right.
So John's retired now. Now, does that provide some new challenges? Because he's ready to go off and take trips, and you obviously have you've accomplished so much. You're working pretty hard here in D.C. for us at GSA. So any challenges around that area?
Well, I think the only challenge is we don't talk about work anymore, and I miss that a little bit, because it's just easier to keep that very solid line. But I have managed to talk him into being the carpool driver. So with our move downtown, I was working in Crystal City, and now we work in downtown Washington, D.C. So he drives me and two of my work colleagues into work every day. So I think this is talk about balance. I think this has worked out pretty well.
That's great. I think I need a carpool driver in my life, too. I wouldn't have to worry about parking spaces. So, Kay, what's next for you? You've had, like we've talked a lot about, jobs in private sector and then the government. In the government, you've been at the Pentagon and OMB and OPM and now GSA. So what's next for Kay?
Well, I think at least in the immediate future is just continuing what I'm doing. I feel like I've said this throughout my career, that I'm in the best place I could ever be, but I really mean that right now with GSA. I mean, there's just so many great things we're doing and such great leadership. We're in the middle of a major transformation of the multiple award schedule. There's just so many opportunities that at least over the next few years, I see myself continuing in public service. And I do have a big birthday coming up this month. As a matter of fact, at the end of the month. My birthday is on September 30th, which is kind of funny for a procurement person. My kids to this day think my birthday is October 1st. They just, you know, I never celebrated on the 30th. But so you do look at that with a big birthday coming up, but you think about, you know, the opportunities and what you can still accomplish. When I came into the job that I have now 4 years ago, and what I needed to do, wanted to do with the Schedule 70 program, I told my boss it was about a six-year transformation. So I'm on track, but I'm going to see it through.
29 is a big birthday, huh, Kay?
Yeah. I wish.
Kay, we've enjoyed so much talking with you today. I got to ask you one last question. If you were to go back and talk to Kay today as she was leaving college, what three pieces of advice would you give her to help her achieve the incredible results you have in your journey and your career?
Well, I think there's some, there's so much advice if I could sit down and have a chat with her. But I think some of the biggies are trust your instincts. Women, I believe, are blessed with an incredible innate ability to have instincts, good instincts about things. And as I look back on my career and my life, there were things that tugged at me. There were instinctual things that I went a different direction. And I think I could have avoided some, you know, some angst, some challenges if I had just trusted my instincts. So I think that would be one thing. I do yoga now, which I didn't do when I was younger. And I think that's helped me get more in touch with my instincts. But absolutely, those that are junior in their career, listen to your heart, listen to your gut. It will generally not lead you the wrong way. Another thing I would definitely tell myself is don't relive your regrets over and over again. No matter what job you have, no matter where you are at a given time in your life, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to have to do course correction. And I think what I've done is I sort of go backwards and I live that over and over again. I remember the pastor at our church was talking, has a great example about driving a vehicle. And there's a rear view mirror and then there's a front mirror. The rear view mirror is there for a purpose, to look, sort of be aware of what's behind you, but the focus really ought to be front focusing, and that's why it's the big mirror. So that really stuck with me, too. So I would tell myself not to relive regrets and to keep in mind that rear view mirror thought. And then I think probably the most significant would be always be true to yourself. There's always going to be challenges. There's always going to be Monday morning quarterbacks, people that may think you could have done things differently. But at the end of the day, if you can look yourself in the mirror and say, I've done well, I've done a good job, I've served the American public, that's what you need to be able to say.
Our guest today is Kay Ely, the director of GSA's IT Schedule 70. Listeners can learn more about GSA at their website, gsa.gov. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.